merely our own sort of personal vision? Or is there really a biblical foundation? And I'm not just meaning missions in general, which obviously, and I'm not just meaning church planning in general, I mean, obviously. But I mean this specific idea of filling one little place with a lot of churches. Is that something that we have a biblical warrant for? And so, before I give the update, I want to unfold that, because I think there is. First of all, two passages that we're going to actually be looking at for the worship service as well. I think this whole discussion, this whole exploration of this warrant or this particular vision in this particular project begins with, obviously, the broader mission of the church and what that looks like. It's two passages I want to read on that to help us define it. First is 1 Peter 2, verse 9. Peter says, "You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." And then the second one from the Gospel of Matthew. "You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven." There's a lot more that can be said about the mission of the church, but I think in these two passages, you've got this rich foundation of understanding for what it is we're here for, what it is we're to be about. What do these two passages have in common? Well, first, we have this image of light in both of them. Called out of darkness into light. You are the light of the world. And that's a metaphor for this idea that we're to be demonstrating God's excellencies. We're to be manifesting that what God is like is supposed to be visible when you look at the church. We stand there as a picture of God's glory and God's goodness. So in one sense, and probably in its most fundamental basic sense, we can say that the mission of the church is to make known what God is really like and how good he really is. What I appreciate about these passages also is that they don't just give the mission. They indicate, to some degree, sort of the means that we employ in order to accomplish this mission. The one is pretty plain on the face of it. Proclamation. We proclaim the excellencies of God. That is, with our words, what we say, what we believe, what we teach about what God has done in the world and in our redemption in particular. The second thing is, there in both passages, especially in Matthew, but also if you look in the broader context of Peter there as well, you have this visibility of its good works as well. Jesus said, "Let your good works shine before men, that they may see them and give glory to God." So these two aspects of this mission, proclamation, again, we're well familiar with the preaching of the gospel. Everyone would agree, this is the mission of the church. Great word of salvation in the death and the resurrection, the ascension and the return of Christ, in which the infinite grace, the excellency of God is so clearly seen. And good works, maybe we don't often associate that as a way of fulfilling the mission of the church, but it's there. Paul tells Titus that the good works that the church does, these are the means by which the gospel is adorned, shown to be beautiful, and made attractive to people, so that they look and they see. This is what the gospel does. It produces people who act like this. One thing that both of these have in common, that brings us to filling one little space with a bunch of churches. I haven't forgotten that. It's a question I'm trying to answer. In order for this mission to be accomplished, in order for the proclamation of the gospel to bear fruit, in order for the visibility of the works of the church to bear fruit, they have to be visible. They have to be audible. This whole process assumes an audience. There's someone out there who's not us, who's hearing, who's seeing. And our mission is only carried out when there's that contact, when there's that visibility, when there's that communication. Okay? All right, hold that thought. Come back to it. Something else about the church's mission and purpose. It's affecting my hand gestures. Okay. The church's mission is not static. Not something that is established and sort of filled. The church's mission is something that's inherently progressive, inherently expansive, inherently increasing. And we see this all throughout Scripture. If we look back even to the Old Testament prophets about what Christ's kingdom to Daniel, what's it supposed to do? It's supposed to strike the feet of the statues and destroy them all the but then it grows and grows and grows and grows until it fills the earth. We have Jesus' own words about his kingdom, that it starts with a mustard seed, and that it grows and grows and grows and grows until it's the largest plant in the garden. So we see the mission and the purpose of the church is to manifest the glory and excellence of God through the proclamation of the gospel, through the demonstration of good works, in an ever-increasing volume and in an ever-increasing scope. More and more gospel proclamation, more and more visible good works, visible presence of the people of God, more and more demonstration of God's people zealously engaging in this ministry of gospel and good works. And this is, of course, this expansive nature of the church's purpose. This is why we engage in missions, according to Christ's command. Great Commission, very familiar to all of us. All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, make disciples of all nations. Get out there. Do this that you're doing here out there. Now, I think when we look at Acts, we look at the earliest missionary activity of the church, I think it's possible to look at this in two phases. Maybe it's convenient for the point that we made, but I think it's legitimate also. We have the first is the initial introduction of the gospel to a new area for the first time, where there's no gospel testimony there whatsoever. This was the nature of Paul's ministry all the time. He even said of himself, my style is to go where there's nothing. No man's been there. There's no foundation. I go in as the first kind of front wave of the attack. So that first initial stage of missions is moving into a new area in which the gospel has not been proclaimed and establishing a foothold in that place. We see this unfold in Acts in this way. Establishment of the church in Jerusalem, and then in Galilee, and then in Samaria, and then in the other cities of the empire as the story of Acts unfolds. Then, phase two, you have the subsequent increase and multiplication of the churches within that area. So you have the initial drop, the initial establishment, but then in those same four areas, just look through Acts 6, talking about Jerusalem, and the word of God continued to increase, and the number of disciples multiplied greatly in Jerusalem. What about Galilee and Judea and Samaria? So the church throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria had peace and was built up, and walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Spirit, it multiplied. What about the churches out of the empire that Paul and Barnabas had planted? Well, they go back and they visit them all, and what do they see? So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. I think it's possible for us to look at this initial phase and the secondary phase in this way. Initial phase, roughly equivalent to four nations, a land, a whole nation, a whole region where the gospel is. He sends somebody there, and they begin to preach. And I think this second phase that we're talking about, I think this is where we get kind of our warrant for the idea of home missions. These weren't people who were continuing to travel and continuing to go. You take, for example, Titus and Timothy. Paul would be the initial point of contact with the community. Then you drop someone off there. Titus talks about as being one that to establish and complete what was like finish the job, fill in the gaps, help that increase, help that multiplication there in that place. So, shifting the idea from spreading the scope to deepening the effect, permeation, saturation in phase two, home missions. Where do we get this idea? And we've already looked at the scriptures to talk about the growth and the expanse of Christ's kingdom, again, as stone and mustard seed. What about this other idea of saturation with the prophets? Isaiah 27:6, in the days to come, Jacob shall take root Israel shall blossom and put forth shoots and fill the whole world with fruit. Prophet Habakkuk. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Or Jesus' own kingdom parable, probably the one where we see this idea the most firmly and clearly. He told another parable, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour until all was leavened. So, in the understanding and the prophecies and the foreseeing of what the kingdom would be like, you have not only this growth in scope, you have this growth in depth, and this growth in saturation and permeation. Well, okay then, if we could say that the end goal for foreign missions is to see some manifestation of the church established in every nation, what might we think about as the end goal for home missions? What's the proper level of saturation? Would I be overpressing prophetic metaphors if I said, no, this is the warrant for us to have this number of churches in the Miami Valley, a Reformed and Presbyterian church in every major city? I might be pressing those a little more than they'll bear. But I think there's actually a passage of Scripture that gives us a picture. It's pretty close to what we have in mind. And it's back to what I was talking about with Paul in Titus. Titus 1:5, Paul says to him, "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained into order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." As you probably all know, Crete's about half the size of Connecticut. I don't even know how big Connecticut is. I'm just going to actually, Crete is about 2/3 the size of the Miami Valley. There. And Paul says to Titus, every town, this is where, and he says, establishing, appointing elders. He's talking about a session, a discrete congregation in every town. And if you get out your ancient maps of Crete and take a look, it's about 50 to 60 places in Crete that can be called towns. A lot more villages and things like that also, but around the coast. So, the thing about that, I think, the size of 2/3 of the Miami Valley, 50 towns, some cities as well. And Paul's saying he wants a session established in every one of them. I start to think that maybe my vision of a Reformed and Presbyterian church in every town is probably just a little windy. Right? I mean, 14. What's that compared to what Paul was hoping would happen in Crete in the 50 towns? Okay. So, I think it's a legitimate thing for us to pursue. Because, I've thought about this. Maybe you've thought about this too. Like, why concentrate here when, why are we bringing so many ministers to this area? And there are sections in our country, there are sections of the world where the gospel is not proclaimed. Why focus here? And I think it's a legitimate question. I would note, though, that this isn't the only thing we're doing. We have 2 people on a foreign mission field from this congregation. So don't hear me as an all or nothing or this is the best thing, but I do want us to understand that I think there's a clear biblical warrant for this aspect of covenant's ministry. Notice again the Titus example. Paul has left Titus in Crete to work on phase 2. Paul did what? Well, probably again, while he moved out to some other place for the gospel not to be preached. Paul was his foundation guy. Titus was the one to stay and do his second phase of the work. Whole idea. Different ministers are equipped for different types of gospel ministry. And I would say also that different congregations probably have their own constitution, their own flavor, their own sort of skill set. And so, again, one of the things I don't want to do as I talk about this with other churches is say, your church is faithful, this is what we're doing. But this is something that we can do and do with strong biblical warrant behind it. But I do want to point out some of the particular values to this kind of work and this kind of approach by comparison. The first comparison is easy to make, and that is the church that just says, our goal is to just maintain our presence in this place and not close the doors. Maybe if you're fighting for your life as a church, that would be an okay mission and approach. But if not, if the church just gets to the point where we say, oh, we're satisfied with what we've attained, we've achieved a decent size, especially relative to other OP congregations, why should we be looking to grow in any way? That mindset, I think, we need to correct with the parallel. God gives us everything he gives us with a view toward increase. We say, I'm going to bury this. We've got this church, we've got this good thing going. Let's not rock it. Let's not look out and see what else we can do. We're not being faithful to the resources that God has given us. That one's an easy one. But what about another model of church growth? And that is just, why not increase this church covenant to 800 people? Is that a good goal? I think that's an okay goal as well. We have 10,000 members of the Church of Jerusalem. That'd be fine too. And especially, I think, if you're a church that's growing in one place, and maybe right around you there's a particular need group right in your hometown, that it will take all of your bandwidth, and maybe even decades, to kind of reach who's right around you, then I think laboring to build one church in one place is a faithful thing to do. But another way of asking this question, though, is this. Why is one church of 200 in one city any less important or less worthy of a goal than two churches of 100 people in two cities? Why spread this out through all of these areas rather than just saying, we can even have the same number of people and they'll all be here in one spot? So here's the thinking that Covenant has done about this. First of all, just from the beginning, we've always thought that in order to properly and efficiently and helpfully shepherd a congregation, smaller size, not these 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 megachurches, smaller size is actually an asset. So it's actually something helpful toward the church carrying out its mission, obviously knowing one another in one group. So there's that aspect. But now, I thought I told you a whole while back, if we look again at this discussion of churches and mission, I think there's a reason for a belief that more churches in more places, even if they're smaller, is a further achievement of the church's overall mission. It adds a lot. Go back to the idea, the demonstration of God's glory through the church's good works and the proclamation of the gospel is meaningful when there's people to see it, when there are people to hear it. I think we need to think about the church and about church growth and church spreading somewhat in terms of the congregation, yes, but also in terms of external impact. How is the church able to have the most actual fulfillment of its mission in one place or in many places? And I would just speak from our, again, very limited experience yet, only 6 years of doing this. But our experience is we move into other communities and we've established churches in other communities is that there are people that we've been able to reach there that we wouldn't have any chance of reaching from a distant big mega church. There is something about being there with people and they're knowing you, and they're seeing your lives. That is part and parcel to the mission of the church. There's something about proximity, and intimate proximity with people, that I think is important to this mission being carried out. And we've seen this, again, as we've moved into Springfield, as we've moved even downtown. And I think it's going to even be true neighborhood by neighborhood, oftentimes. There are people that will see what you're doing and see the glories of God and see the excellencies of Christ because you're in their neighborhood that they wouldn't see and they would have no contact with if you were just on the other side of town, even in the same town. And so we decided that one of the things that we would like to do is go after this permeation, this saturation, this representation, even if it's a smaller representation in more places. And this is just my personal view, too, but I actually think that would, in the long term, in the long term be what actually gets more members to the church that way as well. So, one other question to answer. How much time do I have?
Till 11.
Till 11. Oh, gracious. The way that we do this, we have a local congregation that's been amazingly involved in this endeavor for the last 6 years. I mean, there are other ways of doing it. A presbytery can call a regional missionary can kind of go out in an isolated fashion, call those parachute drops. He just drops on the spot, goes to the mall, starts evangelizing, sees what he can do to get a core group together. And the congregation supports him financially, or the congregations support him financially. But there's a disconnect between any, there's no connection with any specific congregation. Why do we do this? A number of reasons. First of all, again, just our experience in how covenant and how the elders of covenant and how the people at covenant have been supportive of this. The advantages we've seen to doing this out of the church rather than just sort of at this high level presbytery. Local church called me 7 years ago now to engage on this work. They sent me out to start the church in Springfield. When that church was organized, they called me to plant more churches. They've been loaning me out to other works that we're not even overseeing. I'm even to the point now where it's a little frightening because I still feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. But we're getting calls from other places in the Presbyterian denomination. Hey, how do you do this? Well, this is what happened. That's what I should say. This is what God did, and this is kind of the decisions that we made. And we've been able to help people through things like that. But let me get theological on this again. First of all, a general kind of ecclesiological principle. Ephesians 4, 11 through 13 tells us that Christ gave ministers the word, all of the officers, for the building of the body. Then you jump down to verse 16 of that same passage. It tells us that the body builds itself up when what? When each part is working properly. Church planting, church growth, church expansion is something that I believe happens most fruitfully, most effectively when not just a parachute drop our agenda somewhere, but when a whole congregation, when the people of God together are laboring toward that end. And again, covenant is amazing in this sense. Another thing that planning out of a local congregation has is you have a session. We have one group of elders, a group of elders that has finally learned one another's idiosyncrasies and worked together successfully in a lot of other ways. And as opposed to, you can have a session for a church plant that's pulled from different guys and part of the learning curve from them. For them also, it's just learning how to work together. And you don't always want those two things to be going on at the same time. A session learning to work together and a session governing a church at the same time. One of the advantages of doing that as a congregation, you've got to establish a session. The men know one another, the men work together well. And they're already slated every month to meet, so you have the same meetings for this work event as well. But I would just come back to this again. In our experience, the greatest value that we've found in planting churches out of a congregation in close proximity to what we're doing is the involvement of the members, the major resource of the church toward that endeavor. Members that we've had multiple times now, members that can be sent out as part of the initial core group of these works. Members who, in each of the church plants that we've done, we've had this, who when we begin with evening worship are there, knowing they're just there temporarily, but are there, so that when people first start coming and visiting the church, they see a lot of people there. Members that we've received on loan for a year to be with us in the early parts of the church plants. Something that would just be really, really difficult to do if we were planting in Cleveland or someplace like that. The other excellent thing that we've discovered is that having the members involved in those church plants increases the ability that we have to meet people. Springfield, for example, I'd say 85% of the people that we had come from the outside completely to Springfield were because Doc Sitter was there. And Doc Sitter had his relationships with the community. And again, something, you know, Dr. Sitter would not have been able to bring people to come in, and we wouldn't have had as much success from the outside trying to bring people to living water. That was right, church name, I think, right? Okay. So this is something that it's just been so fruitful to see our people involved in. And I just want to thank you, first of all, for this, and I want to continue to encourage you in this direction. We're seeing blessings come from your efforts, from your financial support, from your giving us members, for giving us your time, for your involving yourself even in the ministries that we're doing. And I know it's hard. I know that oftentimes it means losing families from the church. I know it means bringing on another guy onto church staff. Sometimes it means, and I hope soon we can talk a little bit about this, means adding another building to the budget. It means adding to the weight for the elders of the overseeing responsibilities. And it can be scary to think of continuing to put these expenses and this time and this energy out in this way. And certainly we do have to be wise about it. But this is what I can say so far. Every time, as covenant, as we have cut off families and sent them out, as we have sent out funds, as we have brought in more men, every time God has refilled the church, not just financially, but people in the pews. And even presently, to the point of, again, covenant almost overflowing again. This has just been our experience. And believe us, it was rather frightening in the beginning to think about this. Like, what happens if we send these seven families out? And God didn't take very long to say, this is what will happen. More families came. Same with First Root. The same things happen. But that's just kind of what we should expect. Maybe it's counterintuitive, sort of human wisdom, but Proverbs 11:24. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give, and only suffers want. Every time the covenant has given resources, the more resources she has been given. Okay, I want to tell you now about what's been happening. Because this is hard work, it can be discouraging work, it can be backbreaking work, it can be sad work, if you think of, you know, our friends going to different places, not being able to see the same families that we see every week. But I want to encourage you, I think that God has been faithfully rewarding the effort that you guys have been putting into this. And I would just say, first of all, just with the pastor's fellowship that we now have, with four guys at Covenant, and the relationship we have with the other guys who are right around us also. I mean, there are men in churches who are just completely out on their own. They don't have regular contact with other ministers. And maybe you guys have seen the news recently that all of the people exiting pastoral ministry right now, COVID has been an extra detriment to that. But having all of these men so close, for your pastors, to say, this has been such a blessing, the fellowship that we've been able to enjoy monthly. I've seen even our members fellowshipping together, I mean, new members that have come to First Year, relationships, some of them are forming with people at Covenant. again, back to kind of my experience of the youth and the things that our youth are doing, youth from multiple churches in this local area, that was something that's going to be so valuable to them. It really seems to be that we're starting to get this extended family feel. Back to my little sentimental thing at the beginning. It's starting to feel that way. And someone who was new to the area recently said just that and had probably no idea how encouraging it was for me to hear it. They said, the one thing I really like about this area and I want to spend is you've got this church here, and you have all these different families in there. They all have these different, you know, these different characters and characteristics. And he said, he basically said the same thing. I feel like part of an extended family. So I feel like we're starting to see those things. But more important than that, think we are starting to get the sense of a fuller expression of the church's mission being seen. The multiplication of the people with whom we have contact, the multiplication of the people that are now hearing the gospel and seeing God's people in action. We've got, how many now? One particularized church, we've got two active mission works. The established church mission work in Springfield, I don't know if you guys know this, but for a couple of years they've been having a Hispanic congregation meet in the basement of their building. That congregation is now being brought in as a mission work. That is the plan. There is a second OPC church in the works, in the early works, but in the works. There's an intern coming in who's fluent in Spanish, who will be leading them through the summer. Again, that's our church plan that was established in 2017. This is already going on. Wilmington, you've probably heard from the prayer requests. Wilmington has presented challenges. It's been difficult. As Mark Twain was saying, when he read his own obituary, the reports of his death and the grave exaggerated something like that. But honestly, it really did look at Wilmington for a time that this was just going to be the end of it. It was going to come. But God has been faithful. Families are coming back. I feel like they're settling in. They're rooted. They're actually being re-energized to move forward with the work. First Street. First Street has been a lot of fun. It's been really exciting. I've mentioned a couple of times, I know, here about the Muslim ministry that's been unfolding out of First Street. Just an update. We continue to meet once every 3 weeks. Continues to be by Zoom. The members of that community are not even meeting with one another. They did not meet with one another for Ramadan. And Iftar is a hugely important thing for them. So there's still a number of them there that are fairly frightened by that. But they, I think, are starting to feel it now. They are expressing, we can't wait until we can actually get together with you guys in person. A number of us, though, have been interacting in person with these families. My family went to our first Iftar dinner a couple of weeks ago. So the Iftar is breaking the fast at the end of the day of fasting of Ramadan. Jean was officially adopted into the Jewish tribe. She, yeah, there she is. It's awesome. We showed up. And these people are stuck here, and they are not able to communicate with their families because of the political situation. The people with whom we have the closest relationship will be arrested immediately upon returning to church for reasons we'll talk about later. But the man who's house we were attending for Iftar has not seen his mother in 8 years, and he's about 9, so a little bit younger. And so when Jeannie walked in, grabbed her hand, kisses her hand, put his word in, you are the mother, says the chair, this is the chair for the mother. Ask her to come read stories to his children. So these are the people who are really very sweetly engaged with us. We have a lot of affection for them, and it seems like they for us as well. The thing to be praying for with this, the greatest difficulty and frustration that I have so far with this is the slow pace with which the gospel seems to be making itself felt in their consciousness. And it's not been from lack of clear and forceful presentation. There's sometimes when I'm talking to them, can't you even just get angry that you're hearing what I'm saying? Part of it is they're here in this country. They want to fit in better than they feel like they do. And so they have this idea that part of learning what it means to be an American is learning about the Christian faith, because all Americans are Christians. This is where they began. And so I think the interest primarily has been cultural on the front end. They just want to know what Americans do. We tried every time to make it much more focused than that. Each time I have the opportunity to speak, they hear the gospel very, very clearly. But every time we come back together. So the difficulty is, this is a group of Muslims that are very, very intent on seeing all of the similarities. We're all the same, we're all the same, we're all the same, they say every time. And then I spend an hour going, no, we're actually not the same. We're not the same, place that are extremely important. And your Quran says that we are damned in our Bible says that you are damned. And these are not differences, just to look over lightly. They're serious. And you get these kind of, you know, and then 3 weeks later, it's like, oh, I'm so glad we're back together because we are all the same. Okay, let's start over on this. So that has been, it's been sweet. It's been encouraging. It's been delightful. But it's been a little bit frustrating. On that aspect. And we haven't had one night where it looked like we were going to be moving into their building. They had even offered their building, their Turkish Cultural Center over on 4th Street, for First Street to use for free to have our worship services. And we had one night where it was, okay, we need to make sure they know exactly where we're coming from and exactly what our view on their faith and then one another's faith is. And so the presentation to the week before we were going to make a decision was on what it means that God has a son and God having a son and the difference on that, meaning that you're worshiping different gods if you don't agree on that point, and that you shouldn't worship together, and you shouldn't pray together on that point. And it was like that presentation, that discussion, and it was like, and it was like, okay, and the very next time again, it was like, hey, we're all the same. Breaking through that is what I would ask for your prayers for, that they would really see and really understand that there is a difference, and that it's the most important distinction and difference that can be made in eternal life and eternal generation. We were about to launch our English as a Second Language ministry. This is one of those things I was talking about where we actually have more participants and more volunteers from coming to the First Street. So a cooperative effort that we've been working toward. We were trying to start it last year at this beginning of the last school year. COVID. That's all. COVID. Then we were looking at starting up in the spring. And here's what delayed the spring. And here's the next big thing I'll tell you about. We are up two flights of stairs up at First Lutheran, and steep stairs, and a smaller space upstairs. And we've had two families that were interested in First Street, not coming to First Street, coming, which is okay, because of the stairs. So at that point, we're like, we need to start looking seriously for another place. And then the other thing that's really finally starting to happen is it's getting cramped in our little room. It is getting crowded. And so we've been looking seriously at a number of places, and that's why we're looking to move into the Turkish Cultural Center. But in order to launch our ESL ministry, we have to know where it's going to be. And that was just up in the air, and at the last minute, the rug got kind of pulled out from under our feet on that for reasons of state, believe it or not, politics in Turkey. Kept us from being able to meet in the building here. Location, building search feels really critical right now for us for a number of reasons. We want to get this going. It's now fairly clear that it won't be until the beginning of the next school year, ESL ministry going. But as part of that too, we've been looking at, okay, so what does that mean for location wise? And so we're looking at, actually we're trying to nail down a price. That part of the process with a building over on 3rd Street, East 3rd Street. So far, my most reliable landmark for it has been Next Tech at Taqueria. It's the main door there on 3rd Street. Great place. Very good. Yeah. It's the building right next, actually, and your grandmother is a member of the church, right?
It's old Baptist.
Yeah, Emmanuel. Yeah.
It's an old Baptist.
Yeah, Ryan wasted 5 seconds. So originally, this building was Memorial Presbyterian Church. And I just learned this week, Memorial Presbyterian is still a congregation that moved out in Smithville. But then this building is where James T. Jeremiah was the pastor back in the 50s. It's a congregation that had a very close relationship with and very instrumental in the deconversion of Cedarville University from a Presbyterian to a Baptist school. Okay, so the building is 36,000 square feet. And as of September of last year, there were 12 members left in the congregation. A congregation that didn't, probably just didn't adapt to the environment as well as they wanted. But that location is significant to us because not only would we be refining the church building, but that is, that's the officially City of Dayton designated immigrant business core right there. There's a school building that basically has 55 classrooms. There's a gymnasium, there's a 550 seat sanctuary. There are 126 parking spaces around. The bus lane, there's a bus stop in front of the building. It is right now not all that attractive of a place to look at, just from the way it's built, but it is sound. It's structurally very sound. It's been kept up very well. And presently it's owned by the Baptist Church Planning Organization. So what happened is Emmanuel closed in September. They donated the building to the Church Planning Organization. The Church Planning Organization, what they try to do is find a new Baptist church to come in as a church plant. They talked with Washington Heights Church. Washington Heights wasn't willing to take it on. We met with Washington Heights Church. They gave us the tour. At that time, we were still looking at the church cultural center pretty seriously. And so also the utilities on 36,000 square feet. We found that they were running $25,000 a year. Part of that was, even after they stopped meeting in September, they've had all eight zones on full blast. So we're looking at, we actually had, so Judge Bias' brother is the one that put the original heating and air system in there. The boilers were brand new updated boilers last year. They're all zoned, so we turned down. So we're trying to do our math and figure out exactly how low people get utility costs on that by shutting down the sections of the building that we're not using. We've said it'd be great for underground church, except that we probably would never see some of the kids again. It'd be the legend. It's been 3 years. Every once in a while we hear it, and we got a new play, but. So we are right now waiting for our number to be accepted. The first one I gave them was very low because I just didn't want it. Wonderful. Because from their perspective, they're wanting a ministry in there, but if they can't get a ministry in there, they want to get the money that they can out of the building so that they can distribute those funds to the church plants. So right now, I think we're just trying to sort through whether our new offer that we've given them, whether we're close enough to a legitimate ministry for them to be generous with us. That's where things are there. I've got 3 minutes left. I can just take questions. That's what things are. Yes.
So could you just expand a little bit on what's the missional purpose of the English as a second language ministry, and if you were interested in that, what to do?
Yeah, okay. So that has really just been a result of our taking a look at the demographics as we were downtown trying to figure out, okay, who are we, sort of skill sets, sort of interests do we have, and who's here, who's around us. And that's when we were connected with organization Welcome Dayton. It's kind of a website that brings all of the different ministries and organizations that are helping immigrants together in one place. And talked to Redeemer about their ESL program, and talked with Karen Eckert, who assured me that there's still like a great need for that. Got the maps and looked at all the different people groups that are here, and to the tune of the tens of thousands. Right now, Dayton has been officially kind of named an immigrant-friendly city, which means that it's one of the places when there are refugees in the country, Dayton's one of the places they'll send them to, and they have sort of infrastructure in place to help them get started. That was actually how we made our initial contact with the church crew, was through our reaching out with the idea of an ESL ministry and caring connections. So essentially the idea there is, especially if we end up in that location, which we really are trying to work out right now, that would be our front line interface with the people in the community, because there's still a huge, huge need. Sorry, people who don't know English at all who live on that side of town. And if you're interested in that, just email me and I'll plug you in.
And I think the idea would be, like, as you're teaching English, you're putting them before the scriptures in English.
Yeah.
And so they're understanding the gospel even as you're serving them by teaching them English, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, it's a stepping stone. It's an introduction. And it's one that we're not going to be shy about as we're interacting with them on the phone. Everyone who's volunteered to think of what's going on, maybe we've gone through the PCA, their Mission to North America, which is their own mission organization. They have just a really fantastic training that they do for churches that want to start these projects. And it's a board that we all know. And so they've given us some really good ideas of how to go about this, how to turn it specifically into a gospel ministry. That's thanks. I found you were. Other questions? Get the building. We'll need help filling it. That's okay.
So our hope today with having Pastor Brad come and talk to us was that, again, to re-energize that passion for church planting and for the work that God is doing in the Bay Area. I also want to have it be known that it's great that our children growing up in this type of environment, because they have that passion and they're able to take that out with them. In fact, my daughter Lydia here a few years ago, before First Street was planted, looked around the covenant and said, "Oh, we're getting cool again. It's time to plant another church." So folks, you know, be thinking in that regard. Let's look for ways and opportunities for us to share the gospel individually and point to the world of Christ.
Right. Yes, are we planning to have what we see in the schools?
Who would we be? I think that there are a number of people who are seeing that space and recognizing that that would be maybe not an OBC school, but that would be a good use of that space. And a number of people who are hanging along those lines. We'll see. Yes, sir.
You mentioned a Spanish congregation in Springfield.
Yes.
Are there any plans or any efforts to have something like that here in Dayton?
A part of that will be seeing who responds to the assembly of the church. So there really are several different ethnic groups that are represented on Third Street, but I would say Hispanics are probably the vast majority. Thinking ahead, that would definitely be one of the things that we would hope to see develop, especially since there's additional worship space. You could have three churches meeting in this one building, not stepping on one. Yeah. So that has been a problem.
Did you teach a second language at some for Spanish?
No, for anybody. Yeah, anybody coming from any linguistic background.
Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And our outreach to the west side of town?
That would be the next church plan.
But you don't have to be a linguist. Like, you need help with in the nursery to watch the children while the parents are learning English and develop relationships, other needs for hospitality. So you don't have to feel competent in teaching English
to
still be involved.
Yeah, and you don't have to feel competent in being a linguistic teaching English even to be a teacher, really.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to, Pastor Taylor, just for someone who knows how to speak English, that being basically the point. Glad you interrupted. Question? Any more? Father, we thank you again for the work that you've done through this generous body of people and this zealous body of people. to thank you for the knowledge that you use us even when we feel like we have no idea what we're doing. Thank you for giving us fruitfulness. And we do ask, Lord, that you would be with us as we look to the future, as we look to continue to serve you in this way. We pray that we would see great success and we would see many, many people coming to Christ who have not known him before. We ask these things at this time.